That's a prelude to introduce our next guest, Peter Canova. At the age of 23, he first realized his abilities to do intuitive medical readings, remote viewing, psychokinesis, and other psychic phenomena. And this led him to a conviction that all humanity and all life is interconnected at an unseen level. As he traveled 4 different continents for his work, a variety of spiritual figures entered his life, unsolicited, thereby affirming his belief. And he started writing in earnest after he stopped working for 8 months to take care of his wife, who was battling cancer at that time. And he combined his love of writing with his spiritual background and his travels to produce a fictional work entitled The First Souls Trilogy. And this trilogy concerns that first fall of spirit into material existence, as we heard. And it's told through the lives of characters whose incarnations appear over different epochs of history. Pope Annalisa, the first book, tells of an African nun who becomes the first female pope in a near-future world headed for self-destruction. So with 25 years of research behind him in both mainstream and alternative religious and spiritual studies, Peter Canova was able to break down the complex topics and spiritual concepts into 1 award-winning fiction that's won multiple awards in both visionary fiction and spirituality, and also as a lesson to teach us about lost teachings that we haven't heard about very often in the modern age. So we want to welcome Peter Canova to Good Vibrations Radio. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Good evening. It's great to be with you.
And as a prelude, Peter, we played, of course, that audio clip that we played comes from the First Souls video, and we want to remind people they can go to popeannalisa.com, and hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, but I am going to spell it. It's popeannalisa.com, or go to the goodvibrationsradio.com guest page and connect over to Peter's web link from there. But what led you to decide to take all your spiritual practice and put it into a work of fiction versus a work of nonfiction?
Well, I think that there are so many people out there that are talking about spiritual issues and self-help forms, and the bookstores are pretty much full of them, and there's a lot of good authors out there, and they do a terrific job. But I think that the reason that I chose the path that I did is because some of these spiritual teachings could get rather complex, and rather than make them really dry academic studies that would be in a non-fictional book, I wanted to put it in an exciting page-turner where people could get this information by identifying with the characters themselves, by experiencing their lives and all the action that takes place around them in this near-future world, and be able to really kind of absorb the spiritual content of the book through that interesting kind of story. And I didn't see many people out in the marketplace with books of that sort. And for that and several other reasons, I decided to choose the path of writing a fictional novel.
I think sometimes that our first guest this evening was talking about having the soul remember. And I think sometimes when you approach it the way you have, when it is entertaining fiction, it is in bringing in the emotions. It is bringing in the mind. It is opening up the spirit. And there's something inside that goes, aha, I know that to be true. That if it's purely a nonfiction kind of intellectual thing, you may actually not get the point as deeply as you can through fiction and through entertainment.
I think that's an excellent point, because one of the things that the book aimed to do is to bring things into balance. For instance, our male and our female side, our male and female characteristics, where, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the famous right brain and left brain, and those characteristics where the left brain is more analytical thought, which breaks things into component parts. So it uses logic and verbalized language to perceive and express itself. It's sort of the mode of science and math, and it tends to be analytic. whereas the right brain, or the female side, has to do with design and creativity, and it's more holistic in orientation. It looks for unity in the parts, so it uses intuition and creativity to perceive and express itself, and that's the basic mold behind art and philosophy. And one of the themes that you probably noticed throughout the book is the us coming into a balance within ourselves as human beings, to become more fully actualized human beings, to balance these parts of ourselves. And as we balance these parts of ourselves, the spiritual information, the spiritual world really does open up to us. But more importantly, you don't just sort of stay out there in a little spiritual limbo. By using all your faculties, you can take this information back that you get from higher dimensions, like the Gnostic seers did in the creation myth that you just heard in the video clip, and bring that information back and apply it to our lives in a practical and beneficial way.
Well, the interesting thing, reading through Pope Annalisa, I want to let the audience, and is it Annalisa or
Annalisa?
Annalisa. Yeah. Okay, Annalisa. Reading through Pope Annalisa, what I found, one, I want to say for the listeners, that it is a page-turner. Like all books of this nature, because it has a lot in it, you build up the characters, you build it up, and then you get moving, and things start taking off at a breakneck pace. But the second thing that I wanted to point out is that it is chock full of information, which reminds me, as Kirilani said, when the Da Vinci Code came out, people were busy finding out what was true or what was not true in the Da Vinci Code. But you've infused, really, the Gnostic theology, I'm using that term for want of a better one, all throughout this. So there's nothing that you've created. You've just created the story.
That's substantially true. There are some aspects of the story that are in there for the sake of moving the book ahead artistically. For instance, a few of the documents that are mentioned in there are sort of a synthesis of actual documents that I've put into a more fictionalized form just for convenience of moving the story forward. But I would say probably 95% of the material in there is drawn from actual historical sources. And most of the book is actually quite historical.
And I want to, we have a caller on the line. A caller, would you identify yourself?
Whoops.
I guess the caller hung up.
Scared him off pretty quickly.
I didn't think it was that volatile a question. but I did find it fascinating to take the journey. And what I want to ask you is, what led you to explore the Gnostic belief system, and how did you feel that affirmed what you already saw as your belief system?
Well, I came across the Gnostic Gospels years ago, and in their original form, they are very, very hard to understand because they're speaking in a highly esoteric, mythic form with words that the modern reader is not accustomed to. Now, fortunately, I speak Greek and read Greek, so that helped me quite a bit, but I just found something in them that was intriguing, so I further investigated and studied these Gospels to the point where I really started to understand what they were saying. And I found it really incredible to see that the information that these ancient seers, and the Gnostics weren't the only ones, incidentally, the Gnostic tradition, in my view, and one of the themes in the book is that this is actually part of an ancient universal spiritual tradition that was present in almost every religion and almost every culture in the ancient world. And it had certain threads that bound it together, whether it was in India or Persia or in the Mediterranean basin. And it was really, you could say it actually predicted the latest findings of modern quantum physics. The Gnostic vision of the creation, how the world was formed, the purpose of human beings, predicted so many modern scientific theories that it was a mind blower. Now, fortunately, I also had a passion for quantum physics, so I started to see the connections there. And I think one of the things I really wanted to explore in the book is that I believe that our society today has reached a little bit of a stalemate, not really working very well, especially in spiritual terms. And I think how that came about is that, you know, for many years, we all know the church exerted a very limiting force on human inquiry. I'm saying going back to the Middle Ages now, for instance, and we all know the stories of the problems of Galileo and Copernicus and whatnot. But over the centuries, materialistic science started chipping away at that edifice of the church using deduction and observation of the properties of matter and material organisms. They started to form very different picture of how human beings, how the planets and everything else came about. And what really happened is, under this assault from materialistic science, religion today has sort of retreated into an opposite pole. So what I sort of see happening spiritually in the world today is that you have a sort of, you have a materialistic science that's being taught in the university substantially, and then you have a fundamentalist or even sometimes fundamentalist extremist orientation that has gone on the other side under these withering attacks from science. And even Islamic fundamentalism, to a large extent, can be explained as a reaction to people's religious comfort being torn out from under them by the onslaught of this modern materialistic world outlook that science has presented. And then you have a big gray area of people in the middle who are no longer able to believe in the concepts of traditional religion, but by the same token, they also are deeply, I think, empty by what materialist science and atheistic science is presenting. And what I saw in Gnosticism was a spirituality that really transcended religion, and it also, because of the fact that it also was, it could be, you could take Gnostics and the things that they told us 2,000 years ago, and you could basically replace them with the writings of Carl Jung in the psychological field and the writings of some of the most famous quantum physical scientists, and they would be right at home today. And I said to myself, my goodness, there's an intersection there of truths that people were deriving from subjective means, which is the mystics, and from objective means, which are the scientists. And these things that they're saying about creation, the reality, the nature of humanity, why we're here, where we're going, they're really saying the same things. So we find today that I think that there's a current happening today where spirituality is starting to replace religion, and the new science, which basically says the same thing that spirituality does, which is that all life proceeds from consciousness, proceeds from a conscious intelligence, which is fundamentally opposed to the old science that says, no, everything arose from the property of material interactions, particles interacting. So old science is saying that we were formed by particles interacting that built their way up to the human being and the human brain, and the ancient spirituality and the new quantum physics is saying, nope, it happened the other way. We started from consciousness, and consciousness worked its way down into life and reality as we know it. And I just thought that whole trend was fascinating, and I see that as something that I think in short order is going to become maybe a new paradigm for our vision and our evolution as human beings.
Well, that's a wonderful point for us to take our commercial break, where we're talking about theology that actually is shown by science that accepts intelligence, that creates. And we'll come back to talk more with Peter Canova, the author of Pope Annalisa and the First Souls Trilogy, right after this commercial break. What would it be like if people from 129 countries connected and opened their hearts? Wouldn't you like to be one of them? You can be through Diamond Alignment.
Experience all the benefits of meditation in just 6 minutes. Try it once and change your day. Try it every day and change your life.
Create your new reality today.
My friend is so much fun.
He's always playing tricks on people.
He is so smart.
In fact, he's one of the most intelligent beings on the planet.
This friend can literally see through me. And I'm not kidding.
My friend races sailboats
and always wins.
My friend has no problem hitting a high. No!
My friend can surf waves 25 feet high
with no board.
I'd like to see you try that.
This friend can understand us, but we can't understand him.
He saves lives.
He saves lives.
He saved human lives.
He's always smiling.
But that doesn't mean that he's always happy.
My friend doesn't belong in captivity.
My friend does not belong in captivity.
He doesn't belong in captivity.
His home is in the ocean.
But my friend is in serious trouble.
In fact, he's fighting for his life right now.
Right now.
Right now.
Off the coast of Japan, dolphins and porpoises are driven to a horrible fate.
The most attractive are chosen for life in captivity.
The others are brutally killed.
Their meat, which contains toxic levels of mercury, is sold as food.
Majority of people in Japan don't even know this is happening.
Please help us end this senseless slaughter.
Please help us get the word out.
Please join us in getting the word out.
Help us get the word out.
To find out more,
go to takepart.com/thecove.
We are their biggest threat and their only hope.
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 Welcome back. You're listening to Good Vibrations Radio on AM 540 KRXA.
And we're talking with Peter Canova, the author of the First Souls Trilogy, and the first volume of that is Pope Annalisa. And it's about bringing forth a Gnostic belief into a new world. But I'm just going to read a few things. It is part of the book promotion. It says, "The reign of man has ended. A woman now has supreme spiritual authority over 1.5 billion souls, and the world will never be the same again. She alters 2,000 years of Catholic practice. Female clergy allowed. Priests may marry. The Church will no longer condemn homosexuality. The Church will alter its opposition on birth control. The Church will alter its position on abortion. The Church will introduce a new Mass and a new way of considering God." That's all brought out in the beautiful book of fiction, Pope Annalisa, which is the first of a trilogy of books called The First Souls Trilogy by our guest this evening, Peter Canova. And as we went to the break, you were introducing the fact that part of the truth that you found through some of the Gnostic teachings seems to be proven by what science is introducing today. And before we come back to that, Peter, I want to announce for our listeners that they can call in and ask you questions by calling 831-899-5792. That's 899-KRXA. If they have a question, an observation, an opinion, they are welcome to join the conversation. But what I like about what you shared going into the break, Peter, to me is really what the concept of real truth is. See, truth is something that stands up to the test of time. You don't have to retwist it, rebend it, or even as Catholicism did, or the early Christian church, however we want to do it, is constantly trying to refine what really doesn't fit and turn that into a dogma. And that is very interesting about bringing that premise out in your First Souls trilogy. Now, do you find that the image of Sophia and the split of Sophia from heaven and the creation of the demiurge, I mean, that's a whole different genesis. Does that come from some of the Gnostic teachings and the Nag Hammadi Bibles and or scriptures?
Well, yes, and the feminine character of creation wasn't something that was just confined to the Gnostics. There was a time in human history when most cultures recognized a feminine aspect of the deity in the creation, and there was goddess worship was actually preeminent in those days for over a period of some thousands of years, and for reasons that we probably can't really go into here, there was a shift in that. And it switched over to a very patriarchically dominated world, which still continues today. But certainly, at the time of the flourishing of the Gnostics and early Christianity, it was in full force in almost every one of the ancient societies we know, whether it was in ancient Judea, Egypt, Greece, Rome, whatnot. And I think that what we see happening today with the recovery of the Gnostic Gospels is just one other facet of a big front that indicates that there is a rising tide of the feminine principle coming back. And I think it's coming back because the world really needs to rebalance itself. Those qualities that we spoke of earlier, people, and again, these qualities that we're talking about that we call male or female or right or left brain qualities, it has nothing to do with men versus women, because we possess these faculties within each of us. But in the ancient Gnostic Gospels, which incidentally, for the readers that aren't aware of this, Gnostics were early Christians, the earliest of the Christians. In fact, they even predated Christianity. And they were one of the main branches of the early Christian church, one of the two main branches, the other one being the Orthodox church that we have today, which is substantially the Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, and various Protestant denominations would constitute the Orthodox descendants of the ancient church. And what we really see now is a recovery of a feminine consciousness that wants to tell us, you know, in order for us to really progress in life, we can't just go about using, you know, analytic and rational qualities. We have to understand the intuitive and creative and the feeling nature, that part of us that comes from the heart as well as the part that comes from the mind. And they have to work in symmetry. One can't replace the other. One can't get the upper hand over the other. And if you really think about it, and let's use a technical analogy. If we want to get someplace in any endeavor in life, whether it's spirituality or some other avenue of life, the analytical side of us, what we call the male side of us, is the guidance system. But the fuel to get us there is the intuition and the feeling and the desire that we have. And when we use those components in the proper way, then you have a very directed missile that's going to go where you want it to go and be much more effective in life, cutting through some of the things of life. And this philosophy was really stated many times by Jesus in the ancient Gnostic Gospels in the form of a saying that the two must become one.
And is the Gospel of Thomas considered one of the Gnostic Gospels, or?
Yes, it is.
Because,
in fact, it's probably considered the earliest of the Gnostic Gospels that they can reasonably date.
Because one of the interesting things that came out in the book, Pope Annalisa, and we want to remind people to go to popeannalisa.com, because Pope Annalisa is the first of the First Souls trilogy, and the 13th disciple is the second. And Light of the Distant Suns, I believe, will be the third?
That's correct.
Okay, but one of the things that comes out very strongly and is considered heretical by the Orthodox Catholic Church in this is the idea of the divine is within us. The divine is something within, not without. So we don't go without to worship. We go within to connect. And that connection is what we bring out. And that's how I felt it's represented. That's certainly what we try to talk about here. And we feel if we were doing more of that instead of following a dogmatic practice, or an interesting thing. I apologize for digressing, but I recently saw just this past week a documentary on the Middle Ages, and there was I think it was the Huns were coming through into France. One of the ways that they built their army was to say those that would come and serve in their army wouldn't have to go to church on Sunday. it was considered rather heretical at the time, but they managed to turn back the tide of these pagans, so the church forgave them. But we seem to have replaced spirituality in the modern sense coming up to now with the idea of dogma, and what you're saying is we seem to be moving in the other direction. We're replacing dogma with the idea of spirituality, which is more about that connection.
That's really what the ancient Gnostics were all about. Let me give you a little story about the ancient Gnostics and the Orthodox Christians. I should say the Gnostic Christians and Orthodox Christians, and some of the differences between them. Because one of the reasons that materialist science has been so effective in cracking the foundations of traditional religion is because Orthodox version, the literal Orthodox version of Christianity that we were handed down, is really essentially a materialist religion. Now, that may sound strange because all of us are thinking that, well, you know, gee, religion, the church, it's supposed to be spiritual, but it really isn't. The Orthodox interpretation really kind of misunderstood the archetypical symbolic meaning of the Christian story. So, for instance, instead of seeing Jesus' advent as a major event or seminal event of higher revelation, they concentrated on a virgin birth. instead of understanding the meaning behind the profound spiritual wisdom he taught, they concentrated on his miracles. Instead of perceiving the crucifixion as perhaps a metaphor for the way human fear and ego crucify the divine spark trying to awaken within us, they concentrated on the physical agony of his death as a blood sacrifice for our sins. And finally, instead of understanding the resurrection, as the Gnostics did, as the awakening of dormant divine wisdom within us while still alive, they perceived it as a resurrection of physical bodies from the grave. So you see, all these interpretations that the Orthodox Christians gave at heart were really very materialist interpretations, and it wasn't very hard for materialist science to dismantle them on a historical basis and so forth, whereas the Gnostics really understood the greater meaning and symbology behind the Christian story and what it was really trying to tell us about our real condition, which, as you said, is that we are smaller points of consciousness that are part of a larger consciousness, so that that larger consciousness dwells within us. And one of our goals in life has to be to awaken the remembrance of being part of that whole. And once we start to approach that stage, the information from this divine intelligence starts to come through and really help our lives, much as it did with these ancient Gnostic Christians.
And it seems to me that in the early days of the church, part of that process was to really consciously disempower people. Because if they truly are in touch with their masculine and feminine energies, if they see themselves as being the divine, if they are capable of being co-creators with the divine, they are much more powerful than if they're looking outside of themselves to be told what the answer is.
Well, absolutely. I mean, think about it for a second. If you can siphon off that divine power into one person and put them up on the pedestal, it's kind of like empowering a voodoo doll in a way. You're refocusing where the real energy is, as you've said, to an outside source, and that makes people more subject to control. But, you know, I think part of the reason that the Orthodox were so successful and they destroyed the Gnostics lies a little bit in human nature. I think that each of us has to take responsibility for our own spiritual growth. And, you know, it was a lot easier for many people who were just engaged in the struggle of life, particularly back in those days, to go to church, be absolved by a priest, say confession, be absolved by a priest, and go home feeling like we've made some spiritual accomplishment. Whereas true spiritual growth takes work. It takes desire. It takes work. And it's often difficult. It's not always, you know, just a rosy path. And so many people either didn't have the inclination or the understanding or the desire to go through the higher mystery, so they settled for empowering institutions and people like the church hierarchy to sort of do it for them. And of course, there's always people who are very glad to assume that role because there's always money and authority involved in it.
And yet I believe that is our path to our true freedom. And we need to go to the next break. Go ahead, Salazar. So we'll be right back and continue to talk about Pope Annalisa and the Gnostic traditions. And you're listening to Good Vibrations Radio on AM 540 KRXA.
You can enjoy an evening of inspiration, personal growth, intellectual stimulation, and powerful energy for transformation at the Circle of Light. Connect with other adventurous souls seeking the expanded view outside the box. Join us at the Circle of Light on the third Friday of each month at the Unitarian Sanctuary, 490 Aguajito Road, Carmel, just off the PG Pebble Beach exit of Highway 1. Doors open at 7 p.m. General admission is $11, $9 for students and seniors. Call 484-1923 for more information.
Good vibrations, 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 good vibrations
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Vibrations Radio on AM 540 KRXA.
And currently we're talking with Peter Canova, the author of Pope Annalisa, the first book in the First Souls Trilogy, which takes Gnostic teachings and sets them in a future context where we end up with the first pope who changes the character of the Catholic Church, who teaches us that the divinity comes from within, that sin is not something that we're born with. Sin really comes from a sense of ignorance. And out of our ignorance, we commit what people call sins. And before we went to the commercial break, Peter was sharing with us how a lot of the Orthodox Christian doctrine that has come down has actually been a misrepresentation of some of the original intent. And a lot of it was clearly understood by the Gnostic teachings, where things were metaphorical, where things were not meant to be literal. And when you started your discussion, Peter, earlier in the show, you mentioned even the idea of fundamentalism or the evangelicism that we see here in the United States of the Christian evangelicism, and how what they've done is taking teachings and made them literal. And I think going back to the evolution of Christianity as we've seen it, some of that evolution was really, as you said, we don't have time for all of it, but was really an intention, as you mentioned, of control. And you can control people easier through fear. And during the Dark Ages and Middle Ages, there weren't books available, so most people couldn't read the Bible. Most people didn't know how to read, including the rulers. So you could teach people through what you verbally chose to teach them. And they didn't have an internet to go explore around and see if they could find alternative truth. So I think today, where you see the spiritual movement, a lot of that is the gift of the information that's widely available to us, where we have the ability to take our consciousness and use it for something more than something that reacts to fear imposed by other people.
Well, you see, prophets speak the heart of God, and their followers start religions. Because the followers don't have the mystical experience, and so they have to take on faith and their understanding, with all the human limitations that applies, of what the prophet has experienced themselves. I think what the Gnostics were saying is, let each of us become a prophet in our own right by learning how to contact that divine intelligence within us, and that once we have that experience, it becomes knowledge, which supersedes faith, because faith is something you take as a proposition based on a belief of a third party, of somebody else. But when you experience something directly, you own it. It becomes yours, and it then becomes knowledge, and that's why they named themselves Gnostics, those who know. But an interesting thing about the early church was that the evidence seems to be that there was an intention for the early church to sort of be in two stages. There was an outer church for the masses, who probably did have all the limitations you spoke about. They weren't very well educated. Many couldn't read. They certainly couldn't understand many of these difficult spiritual concepts. And that the outer church originally, the church of the parables and the church is perhaps more of the structured, organized church, was meant to bring them in the doors. But at the same time, there was an inner church that was going on, which was the esoteric church, and this is where Jesus gave the teachings that referred to in many of the early Christian documents, the secret teachings that he imparted unto the disciples and those that were called spiritually mature. So it could very well be that the very structure of early Christianity was almost set up like the modern Masons or the Rosicrucians, which was a series of degrees of initiation into spiritual understanding. Unfortunately, the way it evolved was that the outer church developed so many people of a literal persuasion, and probably with a little bit of power and greed in mind, that they couldn't tolerate the inner church any longer and the mystical teachings, and they ended up destroying it. Now, that didn't happen in Islam and Judaism as much, because the Gnostics, the Gnostic equivalent in Judaism were the Kabbalists, and in Islam were the Sufis. And Sufism, Kabbalism, and Gnosticism were the mystic cores of each of these three Abrahamic religions, and they had more in common with each other than they have with their outer religions. The Muslims and the Jews did not do a number on their mystical core as well as the Christians did, so we have more remnants of those traditions today. But some of this conflict that we're talking of may have been inherent in the early structure of the church itself. And if I could just interject something at one point, because I don't want to leave a misperception with the listeners who haven't read the book. This is not a book, it's not a Catholic book, and it's not a church-bashing book. The Catholic Church is a vehicle that's used to tell a universal story about how spirit can transcend religion. And the way that the book treats organized religion, whether it's evangelical, Catholic, or whatnot, is very respectful. Because I don't believe, and I don't think Pope Annalisa believes, that everything is all bad about these things. There's some parts of traditional Christianity that work, and there's some parts that don't work. I think the spirit of the ancient Gnostics would say, look, we think that that fundamentalist interpretation is sort of spirit 101. It gives you some precepts, and it focuses your spiritual attention. But the purpose of life is to view spirit as spiritual progression is just that. It's a road and a path that we travel through life. So you don't want to stop in any one bus station and punch your ticket and stay there. And that's what organized religion, unfortunately, encourages the people to do. Rather, you learn what you can at that stop, at that way station, and then you go on the road of your spiritual journey. So never mistake the signpost, for the destination, which is the organized religion being the signpost. Never mistake that for your destination. And that's sort of the spirit that organized religion is treated with in the book. And that's why many of my friends who have read it, who are fundamentalists, have really enjoyed the book itself.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that, because I don't want people to take my comments or how I express that as actually the intention of the book, because it doesn't come across, you're absolutely correct, it comes across very respectful, and it's respectful of the fact, and I won't say how, but there's a very strong component of an honoring of all the belief systems in the book. It's just that there's a sense of divinity that we have to grow from within that needs to be explored much beyond what organized religion tends to do today. So I think that's really a wonderful way to explain that. Thank you.
Yeah, to get beyond the first bus stop.
Yeah, I like that. I like that very, very much. So if you would like people to, besides, go to your website and order the book and read it, and take the time to read it, it's not a difficult read, but take the time to read it, what would you like them to really come away with from the First Souls trilogy? I mean, obviously, there's entertainment, there's enjoyment, but if you really had to say you wanted them to take a message, what would that message be?
I think two things, knowledge and hope. I think on the knowledge side, it's that there is, as the Gnostics have showed us, and as I've experienced in my own life, and perhaps you or other people have, all of us are capable of contacting the higher intelligence within us. It takes a little work, it takes a little effort, but all of us can do it, and the reward is there. And we receive information from a higher source, which is actually ourselves, operating at a higher level. In some ways, we're actually communicating with ourselves, and it makes us, I think it makes us more functional human beings. And as we begin to replace faith in the unseen with knowledge that information is out there, that we live in a matrix of living, organized, intelligent energy, and we are part of that matrix, and that we can tap into the information of that, it makes us more functional human beings. And as we improve ourselves, I think we improve the planet. And I guess the other thing that I would say is hope, in that as I began at the beginning, as I started to talk at the beginning of the show, that I see a lot of polarization occurring in our world today, and one of the biggest things I see is this fundamentalist religion on one side, and I'm not just talking about Christianity, but you could put Islam or other forms of fundamentalism. It's essentially a retreat into circling the religious wagon, and then you see it being attacked by a very materialistic form of science on the other hand, which basically says, you know what, we don't need God anymore. God is dead because we all came from the interaction of material particles. Well, two things. Quantum physics is proving that not to be true, because quantum physics is essentially saying, you know what, the world doesn't make sense, and our scientific theories contain too many paradoxes. And the only one thought that eliminates all those paradoxes is that the ground of being, the ground of all reality, is consciousness itself. And that consciousness encompasses everything. So that everything we are, everything we see, is a different form or appearance of that consciousness. And that is the middle ground. That is the third way. And the marriage of quantum physics with the spiritual knowledge that the Gnostics have told us is saying the same thing from two different sides of the equation, from the mystical side and the scientific side. But they are both saying that consciousness is the ground of being. And if we proceed from that whole idea, the Lord thy God is one, which is what the Bible said, and it was misunderstood, but that's what the Bible meant. The Lord thy God is one, that everything proceeds from that one consciousness. And therein, I think, with that realization, lies our hope, because it opens up a whole new paradigm and a whole new road for our existence once we truly embrace that idea.
Well, anytime there's a sense of change, as you know, there's the whole steps that lead up to acceptance, and there's always a resistance. And when there's a change, and there's a new paradigm or new understanding coming forward, those that are vested in the old way of doing things have to hold on. And that story is even told in Pope Annalisa, and it's told very clearly that there sometimes is just a need to hold on to what you felt was the truth as new truth or new information comes forward. So that's the polarity of today, as you mentioned. But the good part, as you also mentioned, is that more and more people are becoming aware of their own divinity, and seeking to really connect with their own divinity and finding better ways of expressing it. And so, you know, from light comes shadow, and you can't have one without the other. And that's what you're bringing out to us in your First Souls trilogy.
We are creatures of light and shadow, because as consciousness spread out into different manifestations or appearances all the way down to the lowest point in the material world, there was more ignorance and shadow. The less we knew, think of it almost like reproducing a videotape or a CD. With each successive copy you make, there's a little bit less clarity. And that's what happened. So that as human beings, we are certainly creatures of light and shadow. And yet we can focus and we can concentrate to bringing more and more light into dispelling the shadow, which is another way of saying that we went to our low point of separation, and now we want to go back to our high point of unity.
And we have a caller on the line. And caller, would you identify yourself?
Hi, this is Judith again.
Oh, welcome, Judith.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated with this. I could listen to this guy for 12 hours and have 12 questions an hour for him. I know it's almost late for him to go, right?
Yeah, we've got about a minute and a half to go.
I can't wait to read your book. Can I ask him a question real quick?
Go ahead.
Do you have an understanding of what happened and why the culture changed from the worship of the feminine energy to the masculine? And I guess both that's in your trilogies, and I can't wait to read the book.
Okay, so hold the question there. Hold the question there so he has time to answer.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that would be really tough to answer in a minute and a half. There are so many things that, there are so many things involved in that they've documented in archaeology and so forth, you know, transitions from an agricultural society to a hunter-gatherer society and so forth, which sort of basically tilted the power in societies more towards the male side. There are a whole slew of reasons, but, you know, I think that everything operates in cycles. Everything operates in cycles, and the cycle of let's say, you know, a dominance of a more male view of life as opposed to a more female outlook on life, I think is part of cycles that humanity goes through as part of our evolution. But I think the most important thing I could leave you with is what I see now, at least what I hope and what I think is coming, is it's not going to be another cycle to tip the scales way over to one side, but I think this rising tide of feminine energy that I sense in the person, in incidentally Mary Magdalene, all this material you see coming out about Mary Magdalene is sort of emblematic of this, that whole rising tide of feminine energy is really coming back to rebalance us as human beings, not to replace the male.
Okay, Peter, we've got to hold it there. We want to thank you very much for joining us. Good Vibrations Radio. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news.